podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavior Health Today, a Triad production. I'm Dr. Graeme Taylor. What if we can incorporate into our students' learning and their classroom experience a wide range of skills, attitudes, and behaviors that could have a positive effect on their success in school? And what if these skills could help to not just round out their education in such a way that their academic involvement increases, but also help with enhancing and empowering their self-esteem, their interpersonal relationships, their health and wellness, and personal engagement throughout their life? Well, discovering how these skills can be learned and incorporated into one's life is the focus of our show. Joining me today is Noah Teitelbaum. Noah is the Executive Director of Empowering Education. Empowering Education is a nonprofit that enables learning by contributing to the social and emotional wellness of students, families, and educators through a mindfulness-based bilingual social-emotional learning curriculum, also referred to as SEL. They offer an accessible, trauma-informed, affordable, and easy-to-use curriculum for K-8 teachers and SEL specialists to incorporate into the classroom. Noah, welcome to our show.
Thank you. So good to be here.
It's really nice to have you here. Thank you. You know, I know, Noah, that your passion is around helping students learn and that you specialize in helping teachers develop both a critical eye for their own teaching, as well as helping them develop a sense of how to make their classes and their classroom experience effective and interesting. In all of your years, kind of a quick personal question here, in all of your years involved with education, starting back in 2001 in the public schools in Harlem, working with charter schools as an instructional coach, and then attending and attaining your master's degree, both in education and business, as well as your time with Kaplan, have you found there to be a secret ingredient to teaching and learning?
I think it's kind of like a great sauce. And if you were just to say one ingredient, You would really be doing a disservice to the sauce. There's so many ingredients. And One of the things that I'm working on when I work with teachers is recognizing that there can be a leading strength that's very different in different teachers. And I'm trying to always find that strength in a teacher and help them capitalize on it. I know that for me, the work that we're doing in Empowering Education is touching on something that I was not very good at when I was a school teacher. I did not really have a toolkit to help children with these issues around relating to others and managing themselves. So I'm really glad to be helping teachers with that because I know that that is underneath all of the lessons on fractions and where to put so commas some of the and things like that.
Some of the sauce. That's pretty cool. Well, as we're talking about equipping and we're talking about this sauce, give us an expanded definition of social-emotional learning to include the Castle Five, and tell us why these SEL skills are necessary for all of our lives.
Well, Castle is the main organizing body for SEL, and they've come up with a very wonderful, useful definition of social-emotional learning. There's five major competencies. So two are around yourself, self-awareness, self-management. Two are around relationships with others, so social awareness and relationship skills. And then there's responsible decision-making. And there's a whole host of skills underneath those five major competencies. This includes developing empathy, setting goals, understanding the difference between fair and equal. And this has been shown to have a real positive effect on both academic and social outcomes for children. Study after study shows that it's a good investment of money and that students see an 11% increase in academic performance if there's real serious work on social emotional learning. And I wouldn't say that that's the only reason to do social emotional learning. I think there's just an inherent a desire to help children understand themselves and be able to relate to others really well.
As you talk about that couple of pieces there, I think the financial benefit, the academic, behavioral, and kind of school climate benefits, let's earmark that and come back to that because I'd love to kind of expand upon that. There's some significant findings in that area, Columbia University and a Gallup poll, all these things coming out that just show some real benefit to this being an intentionally incorporated component of the student's learning process, but you also talked about the kids there in such a way that kind of sparked something for me. I've heard you share before that similar to Maslow's hierarchy, if the lower level needs are not being met, the higher level needs can have a significant difficulty time getting met as well. Explain how SEL fits into this developmental model of one's needs being met first, and we can build upon those things later on.
There's a couple of components to this. One is in terms of just your classroom culture. If you're going to engage students in a meaningful way, you want a culture where students feel comfortable, feel heard, and there needs to be sort of ground rules of how we're going to engage with each other. And SEL can help with that. In terms of needs, the standard viewpoint, which is there's been some shifts now where we talk about a constellation of needs, and that it's not only that you have to go up the pyramid, you can still work on self-realization, even if you're hungry, but it's a lot harder to do so. But if children are struggling to have these basic physical needs met or basic emotional needs met, that their energy is going to be very directed towards those issues.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that that's what they're going to be spending their mental and all their energy on those things. The idea of I'm going to sort of expand my intellectual horizon, that's not going to be a priority if someone is saying, I don't know how to make a friend.
That's right.
So
I think when you put it like that, we forget sometimes how those foundational components of just our lives, the emotional awareness, the emotional management, attunement and awareness of other people, the ability to bring ourselves into relationship with other people, that empathic awareness. These are, sometimes they refer to the softer skills, but these are the essential skills. Some of that sauce you said earlier that make the other things attainable. If I'm feeling connected, if I'm feeling comfortable with myself, if I feel like I've got a friend, or I can make a friend, I can focus on other things that I'm required to focus on, like my math or my English or some assignment in my classroom today, if those things are met first, aren't they?
Yes, and I've started to think of things more as a smart adaptation. If a child isn't able to make those relationships, they're going to adapt themselves to deal with that in some way. It's easy for us to say, oh, there's a problem. I'm finding more value lately in saying that's how they have adapted to the situation.
And
this also comes into play with trauma, which, creates changes, which are adaptations, but they lead to, there's pros and cons to every adaptation.
Yeah. I think therapeutically, as you raise it that way, I think that's therapeutically sound. We all come out of our childhoods or we're still in our families, some of these kids that they come into the schools and the ways that they learn to manage things within their home are very adaptive. They are normal adaptations to what might be abnormal in the home, but it works. And what you're referring to, that I think is a very, very good key, is that oftentimes those adaptive behaviors that might even help them survive come into the classroom, look problematic, and then we begin to see it as a problem rather than something that is adaptive in one component of their life, but problematic in another, because the very coping strategies that they use at home become problematic in their interpersonal relationships or their conduct within the classroom. And so not to see it as a problem, but to see it as their best adaptation to what they know, and how might we begin to understand that and then work with that in the classroom in an adaptive way for that child.
Exactly. And when you bring up coping skills, one of the things that I've thought a lot about is how SEL, social emotional learning, is always happening in the classroom. I work with a lot of teachers, and often this is their sort of first introduction to SEL. I remind them they've been teaching it to their kids all along. Exactly. It just may not be something they're that happy about what they taught. Right. And I know when I was a school teacher, I had kids who were getting upset. Yeah. I had to deal with that moment. And I had some strategy. I think it was some version of be quiet, which is not a great strategy for helping a child.
Right.
Oh, exactly. Some consequence was given. And I was teaching something about the social emotional skills. I don't really think it was a great lesson. So I'm glad that we can help people teach skills that have been shown to work, that are grounded in research and theory and, you know, effect.
Well, I like that idea. We're involved in it anyway, whether we recognize it or not. And what you're encouraging is for schools to infuse this social emotional learning into all of their practices, but to be intentional and aware and conscious of it, to include their policies and their curriculum, their instruction, their professional learning, even their discipline. And really, like you just said, we're engaged in it all the time anyway, whether we recognize it or not. So if we can understand and expand some of the lessons you're talking about and these growth opportunities, all we need to do is to take these lessons and curriculum and seamlessly integrate into our discourse with one another, what we're doing already anyway, don't we?
Yes, I think of it as a spectrum of instruction around these topics. And we focus a lot, because it's sort of obvious, on the explicit instruction. Here's a lesson on I statements. Here's a lesson on how to apologize or on how to use a coping skill. But then all the way on the other side is end of the spectrum is what the teacher's modeling. And there's places in between on the spectrum, just small conversations you have in the hallway where so much of the learning happens. And for me, the explicit piece, I think half of our benefit is we're teaching the teacher something, you know, hey, here's what an I statement is, teacher.
Right. Can we go into that just real quick? Because that's a part of the spectrum you're talking about for the successful implementation, I'm imagining, for SEL to happen and to effectively bring it into the lives of the young people. It first requires the adults engaging with these kids to develop and strengthen, you know, their own SEL competencies and capacity. What's the adult focus like with the teachers, administrators, et cetera? And how are you educating and training them in an effective way that they can then come into relationship with the kids and be that part that the kids need them to be?
Well, here we're getting to a really interesting issue that is not just in my part of education, but in many parts, which is what we wish the world were like and what the world is like. And I'd say, if and when I become, you know, grand emperor, I will have all the teachers do, you know, years of social emotional work before they walk into the classroom. But I don't think I'm going to become emperor. So instead, the reality is teachers are generally coming in with very little background in this, both personally and in terms of professional training. They're often, the norm is they are extremely stressed. They are overworked, pressured around tests and other things. And SEL often ends up, even if they think this would be great, ends up being another thing.
Yes.
And so one of the issues we're trying to solve is how to help teachers like that be successful with SEL. Because if we build a program that is simply aspirational, like here's what we wish you all would do, we know they're going to fall far short. And then they'll stop accessing our program because it'll be obvious that they're not meeting our expectations. And so we have tried to make a program that someone who really hasn't done all the prep work we wish they would do in our heart of hearts could still lead a good lesson on I statements and find value in it, and the kids would find value. That said, we have lots of trainings that we do on here's what SEL is, engage the teachers in lessons themselves, encourage and guide them to some self-reflection. But, you know, and we have like asynchronous trainings and cool little videos and quizzes. However, we also work hard to build in the teacher learning into the lesson itself, so that by doing the lesson, the teacher ends up learning with the kids.
Yeah, that's really good. You know, you're talking about the teaching component to strengthen and empower the teachers to be able to come into this way. And like you're saying, our social emotional learning takes places within our home already. We're coming into life with an engagement style. And what you're talking about is we can take that engagement style that we already have, we're already engaging with, whether we recognize it or not, and we can really enhance it and we can make it more rewarding, and all these good things can come out of it. You've been talking, you know, about teachers and, you know, do they see and appreciate their role in the opportunity to have kids come into their life? School may be the safest, healthiest environment for most kids, where the kids get to have maybe an opportunity to engage in a healthy, maybe even corrective emotional experience with the adults there that they don't have in other places of their lives. And they can take away these interactions their whole lives with them It becomes their baseline for their own social emotional engagements throughout their life. But it does take some work on the teacher's part, doesn't it, to really kind of grasp the importance of what they get to do. And the investment has really got some great returns on it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just found this great, I think, psychiatrist, Jacob Ham out of Columbia University. And he has some videos about trauma-informed teaching that he invites other people to use. And so we've been incorporating them into our trainings on trauma-informed teaching. And one of them that really moved me was how it all starts with you. And, you know, trauma-informed teaching or whatever kind of work you're involved in, there's usually this whole suite of moves that you end up learning, you know, mm-hmm. and like how to modulate your voice and the mm-hmm. lighting and the sort of words you should use. And he said, you know, it all comes down to these small interactions, actually.
Yes.
It's yeah. the lunch lady. Does she sort of slap it on your plate? You know, the glop or whatever you're eating, you know, or does she do it with a smile and say, hey, good morning, or whatever it is. And that to approach people in a way that is trauma-informed requires work on yourself to not get activated, to know how to switch between your lizard brain and wizard yeah. brain and bring yourself yeah. to a place where you're going to be a clear, purpose-driven, attuned person. And I was a little overwhelmed when I heard that, because he said, you know, this takes hundreds of hours of work. I thought, oh no. But I also had this feeling of, this is another example of how teaching is such a rich profession, that there is something I could work on for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty good. I got pretty good at delivering a great math lesson, but the work of being attuned to a child and clear, that's something you could dive into. It's such a rich area to explore.
I think one of the ways I'm understanding just your emphasis in this and kind of this passion here is allowing teachers to experience their return, a really good return on the investment by bringing these SEL components in intentionally. There was a recent Gallup poll done and it showed that 70% of teachers are not emotionally connected to or satisfied with their jobs. But they came into this to help children. So when I hear about the SEL programs being implemented, you guys are providing really the foundation for teachers to get what they wanted to get from the community education in the first place. Basically, it's the ability to have a meaningful and positive impact on the lives of the students they're working with. So you're giving them a tool to kind of bridge that because of all the stressors and all the pressures and everything else has kind of been lost along the way, that interpersonal piece, it starts with them and then it kind of ripples out.
I agree. I know I experienced a real shock when I got into the classroom and realized it wasn't going to be hanging out and connecting with kids. Yeah. At least it seemed like that at first. It was a lot of how do I manage a classroom?
You bet.
I, like many other people, really struggled to run a classroom. And I remember having to become very stern. And I had my own struggles with my anger that I had to wrestle with. And I know many other teachers do too. And what I love about this work is it's the piece that I realized in retrospect I needed to get back into once I got that under control, or, you know, and myself under control. And I also see that there was a great opportunity to connect classroom management and SEL. I always saw the misbehaviors, and there's every classroom's got it, whatever kind of school you're doing. I always saw it as problems to fix. And I was sort of beating myself up about it, and, you know, really disappointed in the kids and in myself. And now I see these are all just signs of opportunities. These are things the kids are saying, here's what I need. Here's what our class needs. And it's just a big sign. And I didn't know to read those signs and meet their needs that they were telling me about. And I think that's just such exciting work if a teacher can shift their perspective on that.
I think therein lies hope, because it's not about, you know, how do I manage this classroom and keep them in check? And it's about myriad opportunities to understand what the kids are needing. And it's their best way to express these needs. It might come out a little sideways and a little gnarly at sometimes, or a little misbehaved at others, sometimes even quietly and withdrawn. So we're looking at all these signs, but it sounds from what you're describing, kind of these SEL glasses that the teachers get to look through and see with a different lens what these things could actually be meaning. and the opportunities that lie therein, and they can join now with this understanding that you guys are teaching them to come alongside some of the students in ways that can be so very helpful. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Continuing education is both a requirement and a learning opportunity, but finding the right CE provider can be challenging. AATBS, a Triad company, offers continuing education for psychologists, social workers, marriage and family therapists, counselors, and behavior analysts. CE courses are available both individually and as part of our new All Access Pass. All Access Pass provides a library of over 250 unique courses. That's more than 800 hours of CEs, with new courses being added every month. As a special offer, Behavioral Health Today listeners can save 15% on CE purchases. Visit us at aatbs.com/BHT and enter promo code BHT15 during checkout. That's aatbs.com/BHT. Check out our library and check off your CE requirements today.
Give us some sense of SEL in action in the classroom. What's it looking like?
Well, we talked about the spectrum. So the part that isn't the formal part can look like having a morning greeting, you know, and just checking in with students and having routines in the classroom around difficult moments. So that could be like a peace corner or a chillax corner where children know to go when they need to self-regulate. It could look like a Monday ritual of doing roses, thorns, and buds, which I think, I don't know if you know about that.
No,
you know, so roses, I think this is one of the most powerful moves. So roses and thorns, sort of the centerpiece, is things that have went well that you're really happy about, and thorns, things that were difficult. And then buds are things that you're looking forward to.
Nice.
My daughter added roots and avocados. I'm not sure what those are yet. But what's so powerful about roses, thorns, and buds is it's gratitude, it's acknowledging challenges, and it's optimism towards the future, wrapped up in a little routine. So that could be a great SEL move right there. Just every Monday doing that and setting some, you know, buds, maybe some goals for the week.
You bet.
In terms of formal explicit instruction, which is I think a place where we provide a lot of help, it would look like let's learn about apologies. And we'll talk about, and depending on the age group, the lesson's gonna look very different. With kids, we would provide a story that includes a moment where there should have been an apology and they get to redo it. With older kids, it's discussion. Why do we do apologies? What's the point? When have apologies been worked for you? When has it felt weird? And hey, let's practice apologizing. And so we'll give them little scenarios of things that went wrong, and they have to just practice trying to apologize in a way that's reparative or restorative to the relationship. And so some explicit work. And then what you see is you'll see the kids use those skills. And it's always sort of amazing because I know you're sort of like, I always have the feeling like, is it going to catch? And then you'll see a kid taking some deep breaths or saying, all right, I now know how to apologize. And I think to adults, sometimes it feels a little silly, like we're going to learn to apologize, but kids have to learn that at some point.
If we as adults could be doing apologies in a different way in our lives, we would be in a very different society. And what you're talking about is we're equipping these kids very early on to have a language, to have a relationship capacity, to have the ability to confidently interact with one another so that they're coming into life with these, so, you know, basically like a good EQ, an emotional quotient that everything is dependent upon. We all know, you know, some very smart people with a bunch of letters after their names that are just emotionally stunted. And I don't care about how much potential they have or how successful they've been. They're only as good as their relationships go. And they can be very toxic, they can be very hurtful, and all the potential that lies therein within them never gets a chance to come out because they never learn some of these social emotional lessons about how to interact with themselves and also how to interact with other people. So I think these lessons are lifetime takeaways, aren't they? And it's not onerous, the things you're talking about, how to apologize. you know, roses, buds, and thorns. That's not like hours and hours. I got to learn this big new curriculum. I got to learn a second language. No, I don't. I get to learn these things in a very manageable way that has some great return on them. Really cool.
Yeah. Our program, you mentioned it's mindfulness based. So we use that practice as a foundation. And so mindfulness, for anyone who's listening, probably has heard about it. Usually people think of meditation, but it's a little bit different than that, though it includes meditation. It's simply attentiveness or awareness, moment to moment experience. Yeah. So the way I say it to kids is it's paying attention to what's happening inside of you and outside of you. And we use that in a very sort of plain, practical way to help children learn to self-regulate, to calm down, and to increase their self-awareness. What's really going on inside of me? And that we see as the beginning of a good apology. We see that as the beginning of a good I statement. If you know what's happening and can manage the anxiety and energy in your body, you're going to do all these other skills really successfully. And like you said, these are executable skills, and we really like to make them practical. Like, here you go, you got it, you can do this, run with it. But it leads you into very subtle and powerful awareness and relationships.
Yeah, you know, I know a lot of kids come to school with so much baggage, and not just the one that has their books in it, but so much relational stuff that's so challenging. Mom and dad had a fight last night. You know, maybe they went to bed early and maybe they got scared for one reason. Maybe they got up in the morning and it was like going Mach 2 with their hair on fire to get out of the house, and people are yelling and screaming. They come into school and we expect them to be attentive and focused and eager to learn. Are you kidding me? Yeah, to have these opportunities to what's going on within myself, what's going on outside myself. And maybe finding ways to kind of attune to that, get quiet around that, maybe even find a way to talk about it a wee bit, and just to kind of regroup and settle. These are huge things here you're talking about.
I think it can be a little daunting to a teacher. While education graduate programs now do include some instruction on SEL, it's not usually a big focus. And I think it's intimidating to a teacher. Oh no, am I supposed to be a therapist now?
Right, right.
Teachers are not therapists. They're not, and our program doesn't encourage diagnosis or treatment. It's very much about skill learning, skill building. And we also guide teachers to not open the door to conversations they can't handle.
Right.
And what that means practically is if you're talking about coping skills, you're probably going to ask about when do coping skills come in handy.
Yeah.
And you don't ask because some of those tough times at home are really tough times that should not be talked about in a classroom. They should be talked about with the social worker or the psychologist. So instead, let's talk about the lunchroom. You know, what are some tough moments in the lunchroom? And that's a way for a program like ours to be trauma informed.
Yeah.
Which sounds very fancy, but in practice, it mostly turns out to be making sure teachers don't trigger kids. That's sort of the most important thing for a program like ours. And so even during a mindfulness, for example, don't turn off the lights. Don't creep around the room. That can have some bad associations. And then there's, of course, lots of other work to be done with trauma-informed teaching. But in terms of working on SEL, it's important to have some boundaries around it for the teacher's comfort and for the success of that work.
I really like that. You know, when we think about all the things that go on, you know, in kids' lives, and also the teachers coming into the classroom too, they've got their own lives outside and they bring that in there too. And they're trying to compartmentalize those things and leave them outside the classroom as best they can, but they leak in. When you think about the students, kids are for the most part kind of in the moment more times than not. You know, and there may be some things that come in the classroom with them, but with these social emotional learning skills that you're talking about in this curriculum, we get to come into relationship with them just in that moment, don't we? Hey, I'm here. And what can we do in our day to day? What can we control? Let's make it a good day. This kind of the buds. Let's make this today a bud opportunity where we can do some things that we have some control over, have some fun with, and engage together around. And so I think that relational component, just being able to come alongside each other, not fix things or not delve into things, but just come alongside each other just today. And then we get to do the same thing tomorrow. And then the next day, that's a very cool place for kids to be, isn't it?
Yeah. And an explicit lesson on coping skills is an opportunity also for a teacher to reveal something about themselves,
yeah.
You know, something in the appropriate realm, but something personal. And kids love those moments when yeah, a teacher talks about when I flipped out or, right. You know, whatever it is. And also I encourage teachers to think aloud, which is a teaching thing where you go, usually it's like, all right, I need to add two fractions. Oh, but the denominators are different. And you sort of say what your the process of the work. You also can think aloud challenging moments as a teacher. Ooh, I'm struggling right now because I really want to do this lesson. And the class is really overexcited. I'm going to take a moment here and I'm counting to 10 to bring myself back so I can be a great teacher. And that is a great move right there.
So you're teaching them to, so you're teaching them to model a narrative and a process that the kids get to see and experience here and then get to replicate on their own when they're in a similar place. That narrative is powerful. What a great way to walk them through it.
Yeah, and then, you know, hearing a story, if you're having a little circle discussion around coping skills, a teacher can talk about, you know, some moments in their life. It doesn't have to be in the classroom, and just to have some contact with an adult that's authentic and personal can be really moving for a kid, especially one who's not getting a lot of that at home, perhaps.
That's really good. You know, I know we're kind of watching our time here, but I want to just kind of have you give us a few ideas of how the benefit of incorporating social emotional learning curriculum into the classroom can really have some demonstrated measurable positive outcomes, things like in academic performance, behavioral issues, school climate. Give us just a skinny on that real quick, if you would.
Well, many studies have shown the academic and pro-social outcomes. So the academics, it's an 11% increase in standardized test scores, which I think is not reflects a whole bunch of things underneath it. You don't just like suddenly become better at tests. There's a whole bunch of skills and learning and work that went into getting those better test scores. You just didn't like learn to guess better because you learned social emotional learning. There's also, you know, reduced dropout rates, higher attendance, higher college acceptance, things like that. Our program, when we studied it with the University of Colorado, there was increased social competency, increased resilience, things like that. And then there's many things which we could measure in time, but the improved culture of your room, which is reflected in a lot of those things about, you know, attending school because you like going, a better culture in your room.
You bet.
And studies have also shown that these effects happen when it's much more strongly when it's school-wide SEL.
Got it.
If there's just one teacher doing SEL in their room, it's, you know, has an impact, but it's so much bigger. It's amplified when all the staff, all the adults in the building know coping skills. They know what that means. They can say lizard and wizard brain. They can use the same vocabulary, the same tools, and help kids no matter where they are in the building, and the lessons keep going year to year. So our program, we actually have the same theme across all the way from kindergarten to eighth grade. That way the whole building is working this week on whatever topic, on coping skills or on gratitude. And so there's sort of a feeling of cohesion in the building.
Yeah, really good. You talked earlier on, I'll just touch on it just really quickly about even the cost benefit study out of Columbia University. They were talking about there's a cost savings of implementing SEL. With every dollar spent teaching SEL, it yielded an $11 savings in the reduction of aggression, violence, substance abuse, and better mental health and improved academic performance. So you're talking about some really significant return on that kind of investment. I know we've got the schools coming ideally back open in the fall and reentry being, you know, a consideration. Kids come back into the classroom, issues of safety, issues of have they been out of the rhythm for a while? They haven't been around their peers, maybe a little social anxiety, maybe some school phobia, those kinds of things. Probably SEL gets a chance to come in and be a really impactful component of, regarding their reentry. Probably more important than initially returning right to the academic rigor. How are you guys talking with schools and kind of preparing them for their reentry in the fall?
Well, we are seeing a lot more interest in SEL. I'm really excited about that. I also feel for the principals and the teachers who are very aware of the learning loss that happened this year and have the sense of urgency. But when you stop and have people think about it, they know that work on this is going to show results, is going to accelerate the academic work.
That's right.
And it takes a bit of a commitment to push aside the obvious sort of short-term, oh, let me just go for, you know, shoving more reading and writing in, right, and building up that culture. So it's also an opportunity. Kids have to rebuild some of the skills. They weren't hanging out with other kids. And so it's an opportunity to help them do this and sort of set it in an even better course than it might have gone before. However, of the people in the building, I think the kids are the most adaptable ones in the building.
I think so too.
Their brains are, you know, mushy in the best of ways.
Yeah.
And so the schools that reopened quickly to in-person, there was a lot of concern about, oh, what are the kids going to do with the masks? The kids complained a little bit about the masks. It was the teachers who really didn't like the masks. It was the parents who were really anxious. The kids just rolled with it because that's what kids do. They just figure out what to do. And that's how they make their way through the world.
No, I think you're right. They're far more adaptable than we realize. And we just get to provide that environment for them to do so. Yeah. Hey, I know as we wind down today, I'm going to ask you for some resources here in just a minute, but I know that you encourage learning through storytelling. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've developed an engaging way to explore some of the SEL curriculum and all those components through a couple of characters that you've created named Munchie and Jumpy. Tell us a little bit about them.
Well, Munchie and Jumpy, near and dear to me and to my children. We had a K through two program that we felt was a little bit too academic for that age group a few years back. And so we shifted it, probably based on my own experience with my kids who go to a Waldorf school, which is very story-based and play-based, which, you know, all the research shows is the way kids, young kids learn. So we created these set of stories that I wrote, and Munchie and Jumpy, two bunnies, which is good to use animals. You sidestep the issues of which identity you're using the characters. And they live in a park, and they seem to always have tough days, and they get to use a double day, some kind of trick that their wise uncle taught them, where they take three deep breaths, come along and breathe with me. And they get to do part of their day over use one of the skills. And we incorporate in that story suggestions for the teacher on questions to ask or ways to get the kids up and moving to help them be great storytellers. So unfortunately, a lot of schools have been minimizing read alouds. So some teachers are out of practice, actually, or never really learned that skill. And you get to meet different characters along the way. There's Toby the Turtle, who seems to be a slightly awkward guy. Munchie uses food to deal with anxiety. Jumpy is probably on the ADD kind of side of things.
I thought you had a binge eating rabbit and a hyperactive rat. It was my anticipation.
So lots of characters show up and lots of adventures. And sometimes they don't even need to do a double day. They realize, oh, we just need to shift what we're doing right now. And kids will say, oh, I could really use a double day right now.
I like it. So they begin to get that in their minds as well. That's awesome. Congratulations on that. Hey, as we're winding down, give us some resources of folks that want to follow up on some of the SEL stuff to your site as well, maybe the Munchie and Jumpy. Give us some resources around those, please.
Great. Well, if someone's new to SEL, the CASEL is the big organization, CASEL.org. But our organization is Empowering Education, and that's our website, empoweringeducation.org. And through that website, you can find our books, which are also available on Amazon, Munchie and Jumpy. You can find out about our program. There's a way to sort of try it out for a couple of weeks. And we're a nonprofit. We're a small outfit. If you email us, there's, you know, a decent chance I might be responding. And we love to talk to teachers, even if they're not using our program. We're really mission driven and excited to see people be successful with their SEL.
Very cool. It's a great site, guys. I would encourage you to go on and check it out. You know, I think one of the things you've helped us understand, Noah, in such a meaningful way, in such a tender-hearted way, really, is realizing that there are gaps in our lives, you know, that we can create growth in. And since teachers are going to be teaching and coaches going to be coaching and parents parenting, we're all going to be communicating, relating in one way or another with each other anyway. And we get, from what you're describing to us today and outlining, we get a chance to be intentional, including to include some of these social emotional learning opportunities into our relationships and really maximize the potential that we have in our lives within ourselves and with one another. So I really appreciate you being here today and for being with us and explaining this. Thank you so much.
Super. Pleasure to be here and really enjoy the conversation.
Enjoyed it as well. And to those listening in, we appreciate you being with us too. And we'll look forward to having you back with us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community. And if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.